Depends upon person focusing on contemplating in order to internalize this year that we're discussing. Number one, okay? Pay attention, because the words are going to be obvious or familiar, but we have to actually like put this into practice. So he says, an awareness of the fact that Hashem's Shekhinah is everywhere, and then he is watching and he is orchestrating everything. Big, small, doesn't make a difference. There's nothing that's hidden from his eyes. So there's nothing too big, there's nothing too small that he doesn't care about. There's no distinction as significant or as insignificant as it may seem. Okay? So the reason I'm saying that needs a little more emphasis is because this is not just an awareness, it's not just a idea. The idea, the awareness of these facts are what every Jew needs to believe in as part of our, we'll say, the 13 animamins, okay, which the Rambam tells us you have to believe in all 13 to get into Olam Haba. That's just like your lifeline to eternity, okay? But here's saying his bonin. It means that a person like actually takes time out of their day, okay? There doesn't mean you add time that you don't have, but look for time to think about it, right? Sometimes you wonder, you know, you guys have asked me in the past, like, what were they learning in the Beis Medrash in the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Like, you know, we talk a lot about the shepherds, right? The shepherds, they were uniquely close to Kadosh Baruch Hu because they were shepherds. Okay, well, how does one translate to the other? So part of it, the Rambam says, Mor Nebuchim, is that there's a lot of time to think, right? Like, if you think about it, like, that's one of our biggest, I guess you don't have time to think about it, but if you would think about it, that one of our biggest disadvantages is that we don't have time to think. It's hard for us to appreciate how much we're missing because it's not a part of our culture. Right, you know, like we joke about, like, the, you know, like the monk on the top, on the roof, you know, whatever you call it, the mountaintop in Tibet, that he's just like meditating or something like that. So don't try that at home, Aaron. But in theory, though, there is a tremendous value. Avraham Avinu came to an understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by pondering the universe. Okay, and if you think about it, like, forget about religion. Great philosophers and scientists, you know, made progress just because they thought about, like, wow, what's out there and what is it that I can discover? Right? Those were like the beginnings of all sciences. Okay, so this is also a science. Yerushalayim is a science. Humash Amar Kasav Melocha La'aretz Kvodo. Kadosh Baruch Hu's honor fills the whole world. That's one of the reasons why we refer to Hashem as Hamakom. Right? One interpretation of Hamakom is that there is no place that's not Him. He is the place because it is the one defining characteristic of everywhere. Everywhere is, Chazal say, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not in a place, but everything is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, meaning because it's all-encompassing, it's everywhere. Omar Halo Es HaShemayim V'Sa'ars Ani Maleh. Hashem Himself describes the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam as Shemayim V'Aretz, everywhere. Omar Mi Kashem Malkeinu Magbil HaShavas Mashpil L'Ros B'Shemayim V'Aretz. Plus we say in Tehillim all the time, right? You know what it means? If you don't know what it means, now's your chance. Mika Hashem Elokeinu Hamagbi LaShavas. Who is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu? LaShavas, to dwell. Okay, Hamagbi. What's the shorash of Hamagbi? Like Hagba. Right, go right. He dwells on high. Hamashpil Yiliros B'Shemayim V'Aretz. But he is Mashpil, like Mashpil Game U Magbi HaShefalim, right? Mashpil Magbi. Same two shorashim in that line in davening is found in this pasuk. David Amel says, Mashpil Yiliros HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down to notice and to get involved with even the smallest things. Bashmayim Var is interesting. Even the Shemayim, as well as the Ars, but even the Shemayim is taking a step down from Hashem, where he is a Magbil HaShavas, right? It's not like what happens in space is more significant, you know, in terms of, you know, the big picture or closer. It's all a step down, but it doesn't make a difference. Kodesh Baruch Hu is everywhere. Omer ki Ram Hashem v'shafal yira. Ram Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu is on high, like Ramot, Ramat Beit Shemesh, the heights. Okay, v'shafal yira, but he'll see even that which is low down. Gavo mimerchag yeda, and even from a distance, right? He knows up, down. It's all the same. Kivin shibar shabuchol makom shahu, who omed lefnei shchinas yizbarach. When a person has that clear, after a lot of thought and a lot of working on one's mind to get that in there. Okay, who omed lefnei shchinas yizbarach. He's saying for Hashem shchina. So then, it's natural. He says, Yira Shemayim isn't even something that you work on with the Yira per se, but your efforts are much more focused on the awareness of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and then it's natural for a person to then achieve the year, because you'll be mindful of the fact that Hashem is there, and you don't want to do anything that's against his will. It's similar to what we saw in the Ramban. The Gerash Ramban said that, right, if you always speak as if you're in front of Hashem, so then you'll start behaving as if you're in front of Hashem. If you speak calmly at all times, that's going to be a manifestation, like the Ramah writes at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. It's a manifestation of the fact that you know you don't speak the same way when you're in the presence of greatness. You have to have that awareness. Pirkei Avos tells you that there's always someone watching, there's always someone listening, and that is the key to your Shemaim, to know that everything you're doing is being recorded. Because he is involved, and he is overseeing every little thing. He hears all, he sees all. And whether it's good or it's bad, it's going to be written down. So he's going to get that into his head. But we suggested that an easy time, you know, it's not so hard to necessarily devote the time. Sometimes the hardest thing is to remember that I have to devote this time, right? I can afford 2 minutes a couple times a day just to say to myself that I'm standing before the Ribono Shel Olam. But I may not remember to do that because I'm going through the day so quickly. I think the time, just to give an etzah, when we can zero in on this, is when you say Asher Yatzah. Okay? I think it's a tremendous tova that someone got the idea of all brachos. I don't know how Asher Yatzah got so fortunate, but Asher Yatzah is posted next to bathrooms. Okay, and people give a lot of money to print out these colored pictures, you know. But in Asher Yatzah we say, right, we thank Hashem for the fact that our body functions perfectly, and we say that if it didn't function well, if things didn't do what they're supposed to do, I wouldn't be able to exist and stand before you, which means that I'm verbally acknowledging that right now I'm standing before you, that every moment that my body is functioning, it allows me, not just, doesn't say to live, right? It says yeshar l'skayim, right? That's half of it, but it doesn't only say that. It also says v'lamod l'fanecha, that existence. What are we doing in that line of Asher Yatzah that we say so many times? We're equating our existence with the amidah l'fnei Hashem, right? You can't separate that. You can't separate your being alive with a simultaneous awareness that I'm in front of Hashem. Okay, so Asher Yatzah is a time that you're already plugged. You already have the opportunity to take a moment to contemplate that, and it's in the text. It's in the text what we have to be saying anyway. Let's read this last paragraph. Let's finish the paragraph. Okay, so he says, great, I gave you a lofty piece of imaginative contemplation, but it's really hard, bottom line, to put that into something your mind can wrap around, you know, something you can wrap your head around. A human intellect cannot create an image to reflect that. It's something that takes tremendous amount of contemplation. So he's giving us also a psychological reality over here. Why is that so hard? Why can't I just walk around saying to myself a mantra all day, you know, or even intermittently? So he says, so let's say I'm giving a speech. I'm giving a motivational speech. I'm giving a drasha. And we've all heard a very talented speaker, right, describe something that either makes us laugh because it's a satire of our own lives, or even scares us, or draws us in emotionally because it's dramatic. But someone who does that is always going to choose a muscle. They're always going to paint a picture that is a reality we deal with, right? If you want to, you know, reach the high school kids, so you give them a mushel about a baseball game or a basketball game or a football game, right? Because that the closer it is to their reality, the more frequently, the more interested they are in that, it's easier for them to paint that picture in their head and see it, and maybe even see themselves in that scenario, right? You're not going to pick something abstract that they've never experienced, because it just means it's that much harder for them to connect to it, right? I heard Charlie Harari once speaking to rabbis about how, like, to prepare a drasha. Okay, and he was, I forgot exactly the particular illustration, but it was along these lines of how, right, like we have in the Sora of like stories, Dvar Torahs, about the king, you know, and the people, you know, the father and the son, but it's so much more. Even if we understand the connection, we understand what that represents, but every layer you add that separates between my own life and what I'm trying to tap into it requires more mental energy, right? So if you'd try to paint the same picture, illustrate the same thing with my own kid, right? Then that even that slight tweak in the way that it's presented makes it more personal, so that I don't need to exert the same mental energy to understand what I'm listening to. You hear what I'm saying? So Zaktim Sol Sesharim appreciate that what we're being asked to do over here in chapter 25 is something that the brain is not used to. So it's going to be more challenging by definition. Ki chayven shadav rachok michushenu lo yitzayreu ha-seichel. Because it's not something that our senses are familiar with. Okay? So you can watch Coronation of the King on TV, right? But that's not the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a mashal. It's not the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is something our senses are not familiar with. So it can only be apprehended ela acher rov ha'ion v'hashgafa, after a great deal of ion, of examination, of delving into it, v'hashgafa, and trying to perceive it. This is something we would not intuitively imagine. Say, when things are harder, when things are more distant from your senses, even if you can picture it, it's much harder to hold on to that image. Okay, it doesn't become emblazoned on your in your brain in the same way as something, right? You know, if you know a little bit about the biology of the brain, right? So they're neuro transmitters, right? And the neurotransmitters travel along certain pathways. The more that a person is used to a certain action, thought process, whatever it is, so the brain becomes accustomed to sending those messages through certain pathways, and it can actually get faster and quicker and more, you know, like a reflex without even putting effort in, because you're so used to it, right? When you drive, right, you don't think in the same way when you learn how to drive, right? You have to, okay, you know, shift the gear, foot on the, with all due respect, okay, foot on the gear, I'm sorry, shift the gear, put a foot on the pedal, look this way, look that way, check the mirrors, right? It's instinctive. Like, if you change lanes, if you think about how many steps a new driver is instructed to consider when you're changing lanes, it's like 8 steps. But when I'm on a highway, right, like, and I've been driving for 10 years, so I give a quick look over my shoulder, you know, like, and I check the mirror, and I go, right? And you don't always have time to chaser 8 steps. I remember when I started playing golf, you know, the best advice that my friend's father took us, you know, one of the first times I was actually out on the course. You know, I've been to the driving range a million times, but like he said, like, stop thinking so much, you know, because in golf, like, okay, bend your knees, but you know, you keep your head down, you know, make sure you're rotating at the right, like, but at some point, like, it's too much, right? And you need to develop a natural flowing motion for it to work. So he says, even if you can get that perfect swing and you watch the videotape and, you know, perfect execution, and anyone who's been to the driving range knows that, like, without fail, when you hit that ball like 250 yards and you're feeling really good about yourself, the next one's gonna like dribble out like 10 yards. You know, it always happens, right? So what's pshat? The pshat is because, you know, it's one thing if I got the swing the way I want to get it, but since I haven't done it a lot, so then it, as he says, it's not going to stay there. It's not going to stay with you unless you keep practicing it again and again and again and again. And I don't know, like, someone told me, like, the Michael Jordan biography, like, he used to, like, come home and, like, take, like, 2,000 free throws after school. It was some ridiculous number, right? Like, you know, it's something crazy. You guys know who Dennis Byrd was? Dennis Byrd was a linebacker for the Jets, and he was paralyzed in the middle of a game. It was a big deal. Yeah, I mean, probably before you were born. I don't know.
I was, it is the 90s, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like in the 90s.
They haven't come out to the games and stuff.
Yeah, so he had a remarkable story of recovery, and, you know, like, he was able to walk a little, whatever, but, you know, but they had, like, they made a documentary about his life, you know, and they had like some kid playing, you know, he lived, I don't know, like one of these college football towns in Iowa or something like that, wherever he grew up, you know, and or high school, like a high school team, like he built like this scarecrow like thing out of wood, and like he would come home after school and like for until the sun went down, he would just like bash his head into this like scarecrow, like to train himself to, you know, be on the defensive line. So like it sounds crazy, but the repetitive nature of drilling into your head a certain behavior, it really can become second nature. So getting back to how we started, right? This contemplation is something which has to be drilled in. Otherwise, even if you get it occasionally, it's not going to stick. In the same way that consistent contemplation about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are everywhere, you are involved with everything, that is the way to acquire the Yira. He says, it's not, again, this is a very high level, but hear what he's saying. So we appreciate all dimensions. He's saying that there's a challenge to acquire something that your senses are not familiar with. There's an additional challenge to hold on to it because you haven't yet become, it hasn't become second nature. But he says, even with that, now you know why the higher level a person reaches, they're less interested in the things that the average person occupies his time with. Doesn't want to watch TV, doesn't want to play ball. Sometimes people from the sidelines perceive that as, you know, like he's dried up, he lost all of his personality, he lost all of his other interests. But it's also from a recognition that if you distract yourself too much, I'm all in favor of advocating healthy balance, you know that. But at a certain point, it's a recognition that the Hesach Hadassah distraction is ultimately going to take away from all the effort you invested in being Kona, that which required so much consistent effort to be Kona. Where do we learn that from? From the king. The king has to have the Torah with him at all times. This is beautiful. Zakhtar Amchal, it's Mofurish in the Pasuk. The king has to have the Torah with him. He has to read from it every day. Why? Man yilmad lira es Hashem alokav. What are we doing? We're trying to be kona midas hayira, zaktim sil sisharin. It's in the pasuk. It comes with consistency. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And the king has to be the role model for every Jew in achieving that. Holamarta she'ina yirah nomedes el menakriya abilti nefsekes. Yirah Shemayim comes from pounding away, learning, and focusing on all that brings the person to the Yerushalayim. We say, Dakhik Sha'amar Laman Yilmad Lira. And notice that the Pasuk says, Laman Yilmad Lira, in order that he should learn to fear Hashem. Lo Amar Laman Yira, listen to what we'll say. The Pasuk doesn't say, in order that he should fear Hashem. It says, in order that he should learn to fear Hashem. What does that add? Elefisha Eina Yira Zos Musegs Beteva. It's hinting to us that it's not natural. Yerushalayim is not natural. It's not something which is something that the average human being can easily get to. Because we're physical beings and our senses are physical, it's not easy. It's not so within reach. You need to train yourself. That's the lima. It's something you need to learn, right? It's like you can't just say, oh, if you hear someone playing the piano, you're going to sit down and play, right? That would be ridiculous. It's a skill. Yira is a skill. Right? If we think of it as a skill, it means that it's something that you really got to invest in. You have to practice. In it's not going to come without consistent learning, uninterrupted, undistracted. Thinking about it all the time. B'shifto, b'lechto, b'shachbo, v'kumo. Where's that coming from, Rabosai? Kriyashma. Until it is ingrained in your head. One simple fact that Hashem is everywhere. Why do we start education with a 3-year-old, with Uncle Maishi? Because the same reason Rabbi Avraham Shor said something beautiful, Rabbi Avraham Shor, listen to this. Rabbi Avraham Shor said, I think, he quotes in the name of Rabbi Avraham Gorovitz, the end of the Haggadah. What is the end of the Haggadah? The end of the Haggadah is who knows one, right? Another Uncle Maishi song. Okay? Isn't it ridiculous that this is the highlight of the year? This is the pinnacle of our emunah. We wait the whole year for the night of Pesach, and we have the whole family around the table, and we're up till 3 o'clock in the morning to get back and sing a kindergarten song? What's pshat? So the answer is no. Everything you learn in kindergarten, it's not just kid stuff. It's laying the groundwork. It's laying the foundation for what a lifetime of effort is supposed to ingrain on a more sophisticated level. So you think that you're singing kid songs. No. At the end of the Seder, the goal is to have made even those basics so much part of my reflexes and to understand that how much effort it takes to get there. One simple fact that you learn, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. To feel that we are standing before Hashem at every second, and then we'll have true Yerushalayim. Hashem, show me your ways, and I will walk faithfully with a one singular heart devoted to your Yerushalayim.